Uploading. Tsunami Black Hole Megamix 2K3, now.
The fate of the whole world is in my hands.
You foolish man. I am Ajito Ryo Master. Allow me to reunite you with your ancestors.
Tsunami Generation, and welcome to another episode of Tom's Prerogative, right here on the Absolution Network. I am, of course, your Prom Tom host, Thomas Prom Tom Mattis, and I welcome you to the start of Superhero Month right here on the Absolution Network. Yes, we're going to kick off the summer blockbuster season, which is going to launch on May 5th with the Avenger movie. By all of this month covering superhero animated projects. Yes, all of April we're going to be covering, you know, no, honestly, we're not going to be covering any series, but we're going to be covering movies. And oddly enough, since the first movie is a Marvel movie in the Avengers on May 5th, I ended up picking four DC movies. It was just a matter of what I could get my hands on, and more importantly, also what I wanted to review. And it was just too hard to get hands, shall I say, on some of the Marvel products. I wanted to at least try to get Planet Hulk, but I couldn't manage to get my hands on it. But that's here and there. But yeah, we are doing all DC stuff. In fact, it's going to be the Trinity that we're going to mostly be covering. And for those who aren't in the comic book, no. When it comes to DC, the Trinity is Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. And so, so this week, we're going to kick off with a Batman movie. So we're going to get right to it. Just let me get my my notes, and I wish I had a paper, or just can be paper shuffling sound, because I can speak tonight. But unfortunately, I do all my notes digital, but let me just scroll down here and get my notes. What's that? What's what? I don't see anything. What are you talking about? Oh, behind me. I don't see anything behind me. No, I don't see no 800-pound elephant in the room. That's pink. That's the last time I have tea from the Mad Hatter. But no, I didn't see no 800-pound elephant. Calm down. Are we calm? All right, I will tackle the 800-pound elephant, pink elephant, mind you, in the room. I don't know why I have to make it pink. Damn you, Dumbo. Oh, but that's here nor there. So yes, I will cover it. As some probably already know, on April 1st, Adult Swim did its annual April Fool's Day joke, which usually is them showing the worst movie ever made, The Room, by Tommy Wiseau. And yeah, once you've seen that movie once, that's all you need to do. You already want to poke your eyeballs out. Or just eyeballs, because eyebrows are plucking. God, I wish I could speak tonight. But it's here nor there. But anyways, so, as most of us probably expected, they would be showing it. And it started off that way until it cut to Tom with the Room on DVD on his monitor saying, I got a report back from the doctor, I've got April Fool's. And Adult Swim for its April Fool's Day joke, which apparently was on a Saturday, turned out old school Toonami. They started with Bleach, but then they showed an episode of Dragon Ball Z and Gundam Wing and Outlaw Star and Tenchi Muyo. I don't know if they showed Ryan and Kenshin, but God, I hope they did. And I say that because, as it turns out, because I thought, hey, it's going to be The Room, I missed it. I missed the return to Toonami. Damn it. I, as a lot of people, found out about Toonami showing the next morning, which, you know what, it was just, it should have been a sign of what my weekend was going to be. I'm not going to get into my whole WrestleMania thing here, but that's here or there. But, you know, I've gone on YouTube, I've seen a lot of the promos, I saw the Mass Effect 3 review, of course the openings to how they introduced all the shows and stuff, and it was just amazing to see it back. And by the way, I'm so glad that they chose sort of Tom, like the last Tom in the spaceship, rather than the Tom that was on the planet as Toonami was slowly dying. But they went with, you know, sort of the Tom that they had right as they went towards Saturday night, which is sort of like the last time Toonami was kind of good. But so I'm very much enjoying that was the Tom they went with. And looking at all these Hot Pots, it was wonderful to see. And even more wonderful is that apparently, you know, again, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I'm only guessing the numbers were very, very well, because they're actually gauging feedback on whether you want to bring Toonami back on Adult Swim or something like that. Which, wow. Hell yeah! I mean, I think I speak for a lot of people. I hope this isn't just some sick joke of them coming on a bumper. We had to watch whether we're going to bring Toonami back, and F you. You know, it's a matter of, like, please don't let this be a sick joke. Please don't let this be a sick joke. This, it'd be too cruel for this to be a sick joke. It's just too cruel, you know. And there was, I even saw a Toonami Aftermath promo. And I don't know if it was combined with Steve Bloom, but, you know, they say, oh, how much they hate Toonami Aftermath, which is a site that, basically, it's sort of a Ustream site that, you know, shows old, not Adult Swim, but Toonami shows. And, you know, it's Toonami, like, on a Ustream site, basically. And there was even a promo from there about bringing Toonami back, and it just shows the fan base, you know, how much there is for the, you know, for Toonami to come back. You know, and I love one person's comment. Somebody sort of combined it with, you know, the success that Nickelodeon's having on their Teen Nick network with, you know, at the middle of the night, they have 90s, and they show all that, and Kenan and Cal, and Marissa Explains It All, and Hey Arnold, and Avril Monsters, which, you know, I watch. You know, and again, yeah, there's a huge generation of viewers out there that grew up in the 90s that would love to watch their 90s stuff again. As I take a sip from my drink. Yeah, I mean, me personally, I'd love to see a sort of two-punch combo. You know, I've talked before about bringing Toonami back onto Cartoon Network during the day and the shows that you could actually put on it, but I'd love to see a 1-2 punch of having there being a day version and then maybe a night version, even if it's only on Saturday night for that, you know, night version. And maybe it be just about old school animation or action animation like Gundam Wing and Outlaw Star and Tenchi Muyo and Roni Kenshin. I mean, I have those on DVD. I can watch them anytime, but I'll watch them on TV. And hopefully, and this could be a whole new launching point for people to go out and search out anime again. Again, it's something I talk about all the time. You know, at the end of the day, it was great that it came on, even if it was for one night. I hope they're not joking. I know there's a lot of feedback. I know I've sent several tweets myself. I just hope this isn't some cruel joke if they do decide to bring it back. And I guess thank you, Adult Swim. So, yeah, I've covered the 800-pound elephant in the room. And, you know, the funny thing is, upon hearing this, it sort of made my selection for the first movie I wanted to cover. I mean, I knew I wanted to cover a Batman animated movie. And I was actually leaning towards Batman Under the Red Hood, which is an absolutely incredible movie. But because of the whole thing about Toonami, I thought, you know what, since I have it, let me review a Batman movie of a series that's been on Toonami, that being Batman Beyond. So this week we are going to be covering Batman Beyond, Return of the Joker. And so let's get right into cast and synopsis, shall we? Let's start off with cast. Will Friedle, who a lot of people probably remember from Boy Meets World, it plays Terry McGinnis. Kevin Conroy, the legendary Kevin Conroy, plays Bruce Wayne. The legendary Mark Hamill reprises his role as the Joker, and he also plays Jordan Price, which leads towards a great sort of red herring throughout the movie, but we'll get to that. Angie Hamann plays Barbara Gordon. Dean Stockwell plays Tim Drake. Of course, those two play the older version of those characters. Arlene Storsen plays Dr. Harlene Quinzel, a.k.a. Harley Quinn. Tara Strong plays a young Barbara Gordon / Batgirl. Matthew Valencia plays a young Tim Drake / Robin. Melissa Joan Hart plays Delilah and Dorothy Dennis, a.k.a. Dee Dee. Dylan Harvey plays Charles Bunce / Chucko. Michael Rosenbaum plays Stuart Carter Winthrop III / Ghoul. Frank Whitler plays both Wolf the Hyena Man and Ace the Bat-Hound, who would later be voiced by Scott McNeil. Henry Rollins plays Benjamin Knox / Bonk. Lorraine Tom plays Donna Tan. And Rachel Leigh Cook reprises her role for two lines of Chelsea Cunningham. The synopsis of Batman Beyond Return of the Joker, it is 2039, and of course Terry McGinnis is the new Batman with the help of Bruce Wayne. But when an old foe of Bruce Wayne, the Joker, suddenly returns when he's supposed to be dead, it leads to a great mystery as Terry tries to stop the Joker. And with that being said, let's get right into our review of Batman Beyond, Return of the Joker. Talking about the opening and closing, which really its whole title is the Batman Beyond Return of the Joker main title and then Batman Beyond, Return of the Joker, end title. It's the same song. Really, the main title is sort of a shorter version of that end title. In all honesty, it's the Batman Beyond theme song, or at least the orchestra version of that theme song that we all know and love. You know, da 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 da. You know, that, you know, Batman Beyond, that sort of that updated version of that sort of original sort of orchestra of Batman. And it's just given sort of a guitar riff type of thing. You know, it's, the songs have a guitar riff by Kenny Wayne Shepherd, who was a big artist at the time, big blues artist, mind you. And wow, these opening and closings are just awesome to listen to. I mean, the guitar riffs are absolutely beautiful. You know, I'll just find myself continuing to watch the credits just so I can, you know, air guitar the da, 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 da. You know, and I'm like trying to remember. I'm blanking it because I'm trying to remember the riffs chords to, so I can actually air guitar here, because you can actually see me do an air guitar, but that's here and there. But, you know, it's, you know, I really love sort of the, I know I use this word all the time, they added a bit of grandeur to, you know, the opening and closing. And they did it sort of reverse. A lot of times when you want to sort of add that grandeur, you'll make it a big orchestra piece. But since it was already an orchestrated piece, you know, this addition of sort of the guitar, you know, fits sort of the futuristic styles of Batman Beyond. And you'll actually have a sort of description of the sort of the Batman Beyond style in my mind. It's sort of neo-gothic, you know, or futuristic neo-gothic style. It's, or as I also like to put it, you know, it's the gothic style flipped on its head. You know, it, or it's just like the Bruce Timm gothic style, mind you, flipped on its head. and sort of made futuristic. And this song definitely fits that. In fact, going on to our next point, the overall score for the movie. The entire score fits, you know, it's sort of traditional Batman Beyond score, but there's some additional songs put in there. You know, there's that song in the club, you know, my bad imitation of that song. but also you have another club song that's, Festo Brothers, I think they're called, with Static X, who was a rocker who was coming up at the time. He actually did a song called The Only for a Need for Speed video game as well. I believe it was Need for Speed Underground 2. I'm trying to remember it the other day, and I couldn't remember it. But they do a song called Crash, which is a pretty awesome song. I probably played it at the beginning there, I don't know. I'm debating whether I'll play the, like, traditional Batman Beyond song, or if I'll actually play that. Overall score, it sort of fits that feel of what Batman Beyond is. And again, it takes you into this world. You know, the music, it's one of those rare occasions to where the music is sort of matching of the theme of what it's around, in this case, Batman Beyond. And I say that in the sense of, you know, last week I was talking about Big Windup, and I was sort of talking about the music fitting sort of a baseball theme. But, you know, at the same point in time, you could take that music and sort of the band playing in the background, put it in another baseball series, and it would fit. It was just a matter of that it was the right music to play. In this case, this music is tailor-made to when you hear it, you think Batman Beyond. You know, in Big Windup, when you necessarily hear that music, as good as it is, and as much as it, and as well as it does to, you know, enhance that anime, you know, at the same point in time, it doesn't make you sit there and think, oh, this is from Big Windup. And again, that also has to do with popularity and everything, but at the same point in time, this music was tailor-made, you know, a lot of it was music from the series, but it's also music to when you hear it, like, oh, wow, this is probably from something like Batman Beyond or something like that. So, I mean, it's very recognizable. I think is the better word to put it. So, overall music, wonderful. I would definitely, if you're a fan of Batman Beyond, pick up the soundtrack. I know I have several songs from this, except the end title and main title, which I hate. But that's here or there. So, that's it for music, and we're going to take a quick break and have a word from our sponsor. And when we come back, we are going to get into animation.
Hey everyone, my name is Michael Bailey.
And I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And we host a podcast called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast.
Presented by the Superman homepage. On the show... Wait.
What?
This just isn't working out for me. It's not bombastic enough. We need something epic.
Like what?
Welcome to From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast, presented by the Superman homepage. I am Jeffrey Taylor.
And I am Michael Bailey.
From Crisis to Crisis chronicles the adventures of Superman.
Wait. I'm just not feeling this.
I'm just wondering how there's a needle scratching sound when all of this is clearly digital.
Look, all we need to say is that this is a trailer for a show called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast presented by the Superman homepage. My name is Michael Bailey.
I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And every week we give in-depth synopsis and reviews for just about every Superman book published between Man of Steel number 1 in 1986.
And Adventures of Superman number 649 in 2006. We also talk about the related Superman media, what was happening in the rest of the world when these comics were published, and what else was going on in the DC Universe.
The show drops every Thursday-ish at the Superman homepage, which is located at www.supermanhomepage.com.
From Crisis to Crisis is also a proud member of the Superman Podcast Network, located at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
So join Jeffrey and I each week as we explore Superman during the post-crisis era, which includes Exile, Panic in the Sky, Doomsday, The Marriage, and beyond.
And write into the show at FromCrisisToCrisis@gmail.com and hear it read on the air, eventually, because we get behind on that sort of thing.
Superman created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. Side effects from Crisis to Crisis include loss of money from buying back issues, a desire to read 20-year-old comic books, nausea, drowsiness, pizza, blurred vision, upset stomach, a desire to kick puppies and kittens, and backache from lifting boxes of Superman comics. If the excitement of From Crisis to Crisis lasts more than 4 hours, seek immediate medical attention.
And welcome back, and let's get right into animation, shall we? Let's first talk about the overall style of Batman Beyond again. It's that classic sort of Bruce Tim style. And again, it's Bruce Tim, but it's also tailor-made for whatever the subject matter is. You know, the art of Bruce Tim and Batman the Animated Series, while similar to Superman the Animated Series, is also different because of the characters. Yeah, I'll put in an example. You know, when I look at the Superman the Animated Series art, you know, I think more sort of the same style as, I can't believe I was about to blank on his name, but of Darwin Cook, it sort of reminds me of. While Batman the Animated Series sort of reminds me of other artists who unfortunately are blanking on my mind right now. But, you know, they're the same, but they're different. And no different here. Again, I talked about it earlier. It's the Bruce Timm sort of futuristic neo-gothic style of Batman Beyond, to where, you know, when you look at the built-ins, when you look at everything in the series, the art, you know, you see the, you know, the signs of sort of the gothic art style alongside with the sort of classical 20s cartoon style that Bruce Timm is known for, but it's, you know, futuristic. It's sort of that neo style, you know, that future style. That really brings you into this idea of this future utopia. And Megatropolis, as it's apparently called. And, you know, the fact, you know, with the, you know, cars that are flying and, of course, on the highways and the massive skyscrapers and everything. So, and you know what? Batman Beyond has just such a definite, unique style. It's part of the reason so many people love it. You know, sort of the great combination of shadows, great use of sort of dark colors to where, you know, even the light colors are sort of dark versions of those colors. But because they're dark versions of light colors, they sort of stand out on their own. But you also use a lot of neon colors there, especially when you're in club scenes and that stuff. You know, it's when it comes to the bright colors, they're either neon colors or they're like darker versions of that light color, like a dark light red. And so, and again, the use of crisp line work, you know, the line work in the characters are very thin and crisp. And again, of course, that classic Bruce Timm sort of body movement there. So, again, it's a very distinctive style. When you see it, you know where it's from. And I mean, like, if I just put a random person from Gotham City, not any of the main characters in front of your eyes, you know, you'd automatically know what series it's from. But since we are talking about characters, let's move on to character designs. Let's start with Terry McGinnis. Again, I love how he is different from Bruce Wayne as Batman. It's one of the things I've always liked. You know, Bruce Wayne as Batman, you know, he has this very big, imposing sort of stature about him. You know, he was always more powerful, you know. I mean, he was quick and he could be fast in his own right, but he was always more of a sort of strength, sort of counter-grappler type of fighter. Where Terry McGinnis, actually a way I kind of put it a lot of times, is Terry McGinnis, to an extent, is like the Spider-Man of the Batman universe, or of the Batmans that have been there. You know, in the sense of, you know, he moves a lot like Batman. Or should I say, a lot like Spider-Man. You know, in the fact that, you know, his body is built for endurance and speed and quickness. And, you know, that's how he moves. He moves quickly. You know, he adapts. He will make a move up on the fly. You know, he will, you know, he'll, like, do spins and land and all those things. And, I mean, he still has the training that he's gotten from Bruce and does the same counter style, but he also has his own unique style, that, as we see later on in the film, and more importantly, at that final fight scene, which is absolutely awesome. But again, his, you know, his body design that's built for that, you know, and it's one of the things I love. You know, he was a different Batman. They didn't try when they created this character to say, oh, this is the, you know, he has the same body type or that stuff of Bruce Wayne. So I very much enjoy that. On the Bruce Wayne, you know, we also see him in a flashback scene. So when it comes to sort of the flashback scenes, it's great to see the old character designs that we love so much. As I said before, sort of the great sort of posture that, you know, Batman is known for. But with the older version of Bruce Wayne that we see through the majority of the movie, I always loved sort of the fact that for a person who's supposed to be 80, he seems 80 and yet he seems not. You know, he'll move around a lot, like somebody who's 80 and that stuff. But at the same time, he just always seems like, you know, this is Bruce Wayne. He seems younger than he is. And I love the fact that when you look at his face, you can sort of see the years of battles on his face and in his hair. You know, he looks like somebody who's been through a lot of war. He doesn't look like somebody who's lived a shelter life, you know, with millions and millions of dollars. You know, he looks like somebody who's been through war. And I like that, because as Batman, he has been through war, especially as we learned through this film. So, I love that part of the design. Moving on to the Joker, first off, I love that with, as far as the face is concerned, they went with sort of the classic face from the beginning of Batman the Animated Series, as opposed to the one towards Batman Robin the Animated Adventures. And for those who haven't seen it, you know, the one animated adventures is, you know, green hair, white, but it has just these black dot eyes. Whereas there's more color and that stuff in, you know, the original version. So they went with that. But again, sort of the slick back hair and that stuff. That sort of like latex bodysuit. You know, he seems like the Joker of the future. And yet, again, hearing Mark Hamill's voice come out of him is awesome. Which, again, it leads to sort of that great red herring with Jordan Price, as we'll get into later. But yeah, I love the little tweaks here and there with clothing design and sort of, but you know, he looks like he's in the body. When you find out who it is, he looks like he's in the body of that person, and yet he looks different as well. And so I love that aspect of the design as well. Moving on to Barbara Gordon. And again, not a character we see in a flashback. It's great to see the original character design for Batman the Animated Series. But again, it's another instance of, like Bruce Wayne, you see the years of war, you know, on her face. You know, it's not just the years of war from being Batman, but the years of war of being in the police and ended up being a police commissioner. But, excuse me there, I seem to get the sniffles. That's here or there. But, you know, again, like her character design, you know, you see similarities from her, from what she was in the youth, but, you know, she also seems different, and I like that as well. Tim Drake, you know, I'm iffy on, because, you know, and, you know, looking back, it's one of those designs that makes sense as the movie goes along. You know, when you first see him and end up finding out who he is, you know, he looks strange, you know. Especially once you look at Bruce Wayne and Barbara Gordon, you wouldn't think that, wow, somebody who was once Robin would look like that. And he looks kind of fat and flabby. But as you sort of learn what happened to him and what went on, it sort of makes sense. And I like the fact that, you know, you have this character design that makes sense as the movie goes along. Moving on to the Joker gang, you know, they just seem like a bit of a hodgepodge. Some work, some don't. You know, I love, you know, Dee Dee, you know, with their sort of Marianne look, and of course, Ghoul, who looks like he really was a character design for a, you know, Batman Beyond version of the Scarecrow. But then you have, Bonk and, as I slowly scroll up, of Chucko, that, you know, they just seem plain. They just seem like normal sort of henchmen. You know, whereas, like, Dee Dee and Ghoul and even, you know, Wolf the Hyena Man, they look like something unique to what would be Joker's gang. You know, Chucko, who, especially considering he's, like, the second in command, and Bonk, you know, they just seem like normal hench people. Like they could be part of any other gang. You know, and I think that is sort of a detriment to the gang, of them just seeming like they're just normal people. Or normal gang members. You know, especially when you have, you know, Dee Dee and Ghoul that stand out on their own so much. So I will say this, I find the fact that Ghoul's voice actor, which is Michael Rosenbaum, they apparently decided, we're going to give why am I blanking on the actor's name? More cowbell. I'm blanking on the actor's name, and I can't believe it, but, you know, the actor who's known for his Saturday Night Live bit of More Cowbell. You know, that, he had that same, he sort of gave Ghoul that voice pattern, and I found that hilarious through that movie. That sort of pausing, you know, like, well, we got to find another, you know, Damajig for you to use. It's very hard to find. And oh man, he danced in that that music video, and now I'm blanking the name of the band. Yeah, I'm not gonna spend too much time on it because I really shouldn't. Let's move on to others. You know, you have Dana and you have many other characters, and again, classic Bruce Timm style, like the design work, and for the most part, that's pretty much it. Let's move on to special effects. I do enjoy the special effects, you know, especially watching a lot of sort of the older effects in the flashback. But yeah, you know, I'm trying to think of special effects off the. I'm so caught up in trying to think of that person's name that I've sort of lost my place here. But yeah, I mean it's ooh. I for instance, in the club scene where you have the lava lamps and all those lighting effects, you know, that's very hard to do, and so I thought they did a very good job. And you know, then again, Bruce Timm and sort of the Japanese studio that they put their work through, they always do a very good job with special effects. So as far as special effects are concerned, I very much enjoyed them. Again, like I was bringing up, the special effects in the club are some of my favorite just because of all the different lighting cues that they have to deal with and the use of shadow and everything. So I very much enjoy that. And then, of course, final thing we'll talk about with art is the background. And I love the backgrounds. Again, they paint such a beautiful version of Gotham City. It's so wonderful to see the different shapes of the buildings and everything. Gotham City. And then, of course, you know, especially during the flashback scene, sort of that look of Arkham Asylum rotting and decaying. And it just made it this, you know, it was this opened, rotting, ruined, and yet it felt claustrophobic. And that, I found, was absolutely amazing. A great job by the background artists on that. So that's it for art. And we're going to take another quick break for a word from our sponsors. And when we come back, we're going to dive right into story.
Okay, let's get this show on the road, gang.
I'm Batman.
This looks like a job for Superman.
Monthly Mondays, available the third Monday of every month at twotruefreaks.libsyn.com.
And welcome back, and let's get right into our into story, shall we say? As I try to struggle here to, I'm very tempted right now to go onto YouTube or just onto Wikipedia and try to find his name. But as I struggle to, you know, rebound from that, let's move on to story. And let's talk about the overall plot of the film. And basics, or should I say basically. I told you I'm trying to rebound. Because live podcasting is awesome. But really the basic story is, it's a mystery story. It's a classic Batman mystery story, and it's not a matter of who done it as much as it's a matter of who is it. Which, you know, those are always been some of my favorite Batman stories. You know, For instance, I think a best example of this is the Batman episode where, you know, he rescues the kids from the underground. You know, he knows there's somebody who did something. It's a matter of who is this person as much or much of who did it. Because, you know, they catch the little kids stealing, but it's also a matter of who's behind them. And again, another prime example of this. Again, stories written by Paul Dini. You know, of course, with Bruce Timm and Alan Burnett, who did producing and directing against... Again, my friend Donovan, you know, brings up the fact that Alan Burnett doesn't get as much respect as he should, and he is kind of right on that. And, you know, I mean, I've always given him the respect, but, yeah, I mean, it is something to where all of them did such a great job on this. And again, like I said, it's just that basic sort of Batman mystery plot of finding out who is it, as much of who done it. And at the same time, adding, as, you know, I'll use this word later, especially since we'll sort of be talking about it, you know, being a bookend for the actual original Batman animated series. And, you know, it puts into place a lot of questions that have always been asked about Batman Beyond. Just had a Tim Tebow moment there. In case you're wondering, no, it has nothing to do with religion. When I say Tim Tebow moment, I just realized, you know, oh my god, I just said a word and I'm trying not to say it much. You know, kind of like how Tim Tebow said, excited to be a part of the Jets 49 times. I apologize. That kind of took me right out. My focus is all over today, but that's here nor there. But yeah, like I said, and I really enjoy the mystery. You know, as I get back on track here, they give you just enough clues to, you know, follow along with what Terry is, you know, trying to figure out. But at the same time, they don't give you more clues than what Terry knows. So it's just as much of a mystery to you as it is to everybody else in the movie. And that's a great way to do the mystery. You don't want to, you know, give out too many clues so your audience say, oh, I know who it is. You know, I mean, you don't think it's going to be Tim Drake. You know, they give you a clue that it's Tim Drake by showing him earlier and, you know, him being scared. But then when you learn that that person's Tim Drake, also in the fact that, you know, the same voice actor for the Joker is the voice actor for Jordan Price, and they have the same build, you know, it's a great red herring to lead you towards, oh, Jordan Price is the Joker. And then when, you know, you find out that he isn't, they actually lead very quickly into figuring out that it has to be Tim Drake, which would be the natural mindset of the viewer. And I like that. It's a great connection from clue to clue of the overall mystery of the plot. With that, let's move on to sort of the Joker scheme. And I think the thing I like about this Joker scheme is the complexity of the scheme. It's not just him wanting to cause chaos with, you know, a giant government laser gun in space, which, you know, is a typical Joker scheme. But there is complexity to it in the fact that it also doubles with him, you know, beating Bruce Wayne by using Tim Drake's body, you know, with the technology that he, you know, dabbled in and put into his body. You know, it leads to many steps of having to go through to defeat him. It's these sort of complex plots that that people love with the Joker. You know, you saw some of them in Batman the Animated Series, but this is like the first big one I can remember being done in this movie. As because of that, you'd see the same sort of complex plots in Arkham Asylum, in Arkham City, in sort of future movies and that stuff. You know, it really lends itself to what Joker was in the comic books, which was the fact, he was a character of chaos. He just wanted to cause chaos, but his plans were always complex. Just look at Death in the Family and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, just a complexity there that I very much enjoy within his scheme. But at the end of the day, yeah, it is. Well, his goal, he does have that sort of side goal of, you know, taunting and, you know, the continuation of his game with Batman. It is a matter to where he is just trying to cause chaos, because that's what he enjoyed doing. Yeah, that's what the Joker does. I hate to use a clip from that Dark Knight, but he is an agent of chaos. It's what he does. Let's move on to the flashback scene and the first death of the Joker. I say first because, of course, ultimately when Terry wins, you know, he eliminates Joker from Tim Drake's body. But, you know, the flashback scene to where we first see what the Joker did, it served as a, you know, sort of, I read this somewhere else, and it really is true. It really did show the fine line between villainy and vigilante, and just how easy it's to cross that line, and how easy it is to trick people to cross that line. And, you know, I mean, I don't think it's something that people backed into, but at the same point in time, it's just sort of this relationship between the Joker and Batman, and it's a heart-wrenching scene to watch, you know. And while at the same time serving as that, like I said, that bookend towards Batman the Animated Series. And I want to add something. I'm watching the Blu-ray version that recently came out. The Blu-ray version is the unedited version of Batman Beyond Return of the Joker. The version most people have seen, the one that's been on television, in the scene, Joker is killed by, you know, when he throws Tim the gun, he throws it away and pushes the Joker towards some wires, and he ends up slipping and electrocuting and hanging himself at the same time, you know, in, like, shadow. But in the unedited movie, he throws him to the gun, he clicks the trigger once to shoot the flag out, and then he hits it again, but he points it at the Joker, and he shoots the Joker, and, you know, with the same, flag gun that you see him use earlier in the movie to kill Bonk, he gets killed by that. Tim Drake, you know, even though he's been turned into sort of JJ, you know, he still has enough mindset to try to save Batman. And it's just this heart-wrenching scene, and there's so much character depth and development in the scene. And I know I always go back to, but again, the greatest stories are, you know, it's a simple story that is built upon character development and character death. You know, to put it sort of paint again, the simple story is your sort of your blank canvas, and you use character development and character death to, you know, paint the beautiful picture. And it's such a beautiful picture painted, you know, sort of the deep and dark undertones within Batman Animated Series that made it such a good animated series as well. I think it's a terrific sort of heartbreaking and bittersweet, you know, ending for Batman the Animated Series. And at the same time, this flashback scene, it really lends itself sort of a great towards a great kind of strength, you know, as we'll talk about in a second, to Batman Beyond being its own thing. And that's sort of the next point we're going to talk about, Terry coming into his own as Batman. You know, another way to look at it is by solving this and sort of putting that whole situation that happened so many years ago that had tainted, you know, Bruce and Tim and Barbara with, you know, compromise and stuff like that, by Terry solving that, he's given a happy ending to that whole situation. At the same time, he's come into his own as Batman. And that's something that is a big theme through this movie. Because a lot of it is, it's really the first time Terry's having to do a lot of this stuff on his own. And, you know, Bruce isn't going to be, he's there. And so for him to be Batman, for him to be able to do it on his own, you know, he's able to solve the mystery pretty much on his own. You know, he's the one who does the investigation, he does the fight, and he's the one who figures out a fighting style that really works best against the Joker. You know, which, that is a beautiful thing. You know, again, it shows that he is his own Batman. While, you know, Bruce probably wouldn't fight dirty and make jokes like that, Terry would, and that's who Terry is. You know, he did fight dirty. That beautiful sort of scene, the psychological depth in that fight scene, you know, where he's, you know, he's taunting the Joker, and it's so different to see a Batman. And this is why I say he's sort of similar to Spider-Man, because Terry, you know, he does like to talk a lot and make those sort of funny little quips. And sort of how he's like, Joker's like, oh, don't psychoanalyze me, boy. Oh, I don't need a degree to psychoanalyze you. and just the taunting, and it's, I'm going to say, it's freaking awesome. It's a beautifully done scene, and, you know, Will Friedle, Mark Hamill, in that scene, voice acting, absolutely incredible. You know, I use that scene, by the way, in my Evolution of American Anime panel that I do at conventions. And for that very reason. You know, and it just shows you Terry coming into his own as Batman, which, you know, and that's the great thing, is to an extent you can look at this as a crossover between Batman the Animated Series and Batman Beyond, being that it is an ending for Batman the Animated Series, and at the same time, you know, a jump beyond point for Batman Beyond. And it does the exact thing a crossover between two series should do. You know, I'm sort of quoting Link Carter here, because, you know, he said this in talking about, I believe he was actually talking about the Power Rangers crossover between Ninja Storm and Dino Thunder, and where the, you know, a crossover is supposed to be, you know, you don't want one series looking stronger than the other. You know, and that's very true, and you see that here. You hear Batman, you know, neither one looks, you know, even though you really only have Batman the Animated Series in that one scene, you know, neither looks stronger than the other. You know, they both look the same, and really, it's a passing of the torch through this crossover, which is really good to see. And again, I keep talking about it. Final point I can talk about is, you know, again, bookend for Batman Animated Series, which is what this movie is. I mean, as a bookend, as an ending for Batman the Animated Series. You know, and this is sort of start a common trend with this, you know, because the, like, the final episode of Batman Beyond would be in Justice League Unlimited. I mean, I guess it's just a matter of making an animated television show, but, you know, as an ending, you know, the fact that it answered so many questions that we had about Batman the Animated Series, about the stuff that happened, and it sort of explains why people led down the road that they did. It sort of explained why, at the beginning of Batman Beyond, Barbara had such an issue with there being a Batman. You know, why Bruce didn't want anybody else to be in the suit, why he was alone, and all of that stuff. You know, those are questions that we had at the beginning of Batman Beyond that we didn't understand, and what happened in that flashback scene that led to this really being an ending for Batman the Animated Series answered all of those questions, and that was really a great thing. At the end of the day, final verdict. Very good soundtrack. You know, classic Bruce Timm animation. And again, another DC Bruce Timm universe animated movie with a great story that is simple, and yet it's just filled with character development, character death. You know, it's the characters that run this story. You know, these are the reasons I have issues with shows like Gurren Lagann, shows like Code Geass, shows like Death Note, and some of the other animes that have come out between 2005 to 2009, and more importantly, a lot of the cartoons that have come out in general, especially that time frame. It's a matter of they want the story to be the be-all, end-all, and they don't understand that the best stories, if you look at all of them, they have one thing in common. They're very simple, but they use the characters to tell the story. The characters tell the story, and they're the most important part, and they don't focus on that. Here is just a prime example of people doing that. Terry McGinnis tells the story. Barbara Gordon tells the story. Bruce tells the story. The Joker tells it. You know, all these characters, they tell this great mystery story, and at the end of the day, you feel fulfilled, and it's a wonderful animation to watch. Every time I watch it from start to finish. When I say start to finish, I mean from the beginning all the way through the credits, because, of course, that ending title song is so awesome. So at the end of the day, this is definitely a great nostalgic, especially now it's nostalgic, but nostalgic movie to watch. Again, it's still of that early Bruce Timm art that we saw in Batman the Animated Series and Superman. And when I say that, as opposed to sort of the art that is, you know, coming out now, that is not solely just Bruce Timm's style. It has bits of his style, but it's not solely, you know, because they are, you know, for instance, with, you know, Batman Under the Red Hood, they're trying to, you know, mimic, I don't want to say mimic, but they're basing around the art of the story of the Red Hood that that movie is based off of. So, yeah, it's a wonderful movie. I highly check it out. 5 out of 5 for Batman Beyond, Return of the Joker. And that's it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. I hope you all enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed the beginning of Superhero Month. If you have any comments you want to leave about this episode, anything you want to add to things I said, anything you agree with, anything you disagree with, hate mail, fan mail, whatever. Remember, there are several ways to do it for those future people, and that one day in the future when we finally get on iTunes, hello, future people. Of course, you can leave iTunes comments. I keep saying that, but one day we're finally getting on iTunes. Still waiting to hear back from iTunes. But of course, for those right now, there are several ways. Of course, there is our Facebook fan page, which you can find by searching out Absolution Network on Facebook. You can leave a comment on the post itself. Of course, you can find that post by going to www.an.132productions.com. And of course, you can leave an email always by emailing to absolution132@yahoo.com. And of course, remember to check out all my other work that is coming up. I'm so excited. You know, first my Godzilla podcast, which next week, since this episode is coming out the first week of April, the second week of April, I will have a new episode of Tokyo SOS coming out, which I starred the first movie of the Henshi series of Godzilla, Godzilla 1985. I'll have my good friend Kyle Yount on for that, and I can't wait to review that. So that's coming out, and you can find that by going to www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And of course, my comic book crazy podcast, which has so many great things coming down the pipe. I have several interviews for several different podcasts, one for Comic Book Crazy, one for Hexcast. Of course, I have a new episode of Comic Book Crazy coming out. A new episode soon will come out for Hexcast. And of course, a new episode of the Comic Book Pitch will be coming out soon. And you can find all of those by going to www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And of course, for Tokyo SOS and Comic Book Crazy, you can find those by searching iTunes by typing in, you know, the podcast name. Of course, remember, as I always say, because I always pimp them, because I really do want you guys to check it out. Check out all my friends on the sidebar of the side: Michael Bailey's Jesus and Longbox from Crisis to Crisis, Brad Douglas' Spider-Man Crawl Space, Steven Slecker's Major Spoilers, Scott Gardner's 2-2 Freaks, you know, Batgirl the Oracle, Clone Saga Chronicles, That Guy with the Glasses, Reviewtopia, you know, 2-in-1 Showcase, just to name a few. They're all on the sidebar of the site. Check them out. And that's it for this week's episode of Tom's Prerogative. On the next episode, we are going to cover one of the best-selling graphic novels of all time. Well, we're not going to be covering the graphic novel, but a movie based off one of the best-selling graphic novels of all time. Yes, that's right. Next week, we're going to dive into the death and return of Superman as we review Superman Doomsday. So, until next week, my Toonami generation, stay gold.
A cursed samurai. You have succeeded again in eluding my effort. But I am not worried. For one day you will fail.
Clark Nova, don't sleep on it.